Ken Forrester, Executive Director at Momenta. Welcome to our Digital Thread podcast, produced by, for, and about digital industry leaders. In this series of conversations, we capture insights from the best and brightest minds in digital industry. They're executives, entrepreneurs, advisors, and other thought leaders. What they have in common is, like our team at Momenta, they are deep industry operators. We hope you find these podcasts informative, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Good day and welcome to episode 206 of our Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. Today, I'm pleased to host Praveen Rao, Global Head of Industrial IoT and Analytics in AWS Worldwide Specialist Organization at Amazon. In his current role, Praveen is responsible for growth strategy, growth initiatives, and partner ecosystem for Internet of Things and AIML business in the manufacturing and supply chain vertical. Prior to Amazon, Praveen spent 8 years at IBM as a managing director, where he was responsible for manufacturing and supply chain solutions leveraging IoT, analytics, and blockchain technologies. Before IBM, Praveen served as managing partner, CTO, CIO, and has consulted with several Fortune 500 companies. Praveen has a Bachelor of Science and a Master's of Science from Michigan Tech in Mechanical Engineering and an MBA from the University of Chicago. He lives in Atlanta, Georgia with his wife and two daughters and enjoys reading, hiking, playing tennis, and ping pong. Praveen, welcome to our Digital Thread podcast.
That's a wonderful introduction. Thank you, Ken, for having me. It's truly a pleasure to be here. Looking forward to spending time with you today.
As well. This is certainly setting up to be a very interesting conversation given many of the changes at some of your peer cloud computing companies. And so I'm really excited to have this. So, you know, we call this the Digital Thread podcast. And so we always kick off asking about your own digital thread, i.e. the one or more thematic threads that define your digital industry journey. What are your digital threads?
It's a very interesting question. You know, first of all, I would like to think of digital thread as a closed loop, a system, or it's closed loop information exchange between physical and digital worlds. The intent is to transform how products go through their entire life cycle, you know, in the case of assets from say art to part, and also how they work in operations. The main purpose of digital thread, at least to me, is to ensure it enables access to data and actionable insights. With that definition, my digital thread started very early, probably even in my undergrad days. You know, I've been always a curious kid of the block. I've been an early adopter of technology. And as I reflect upon myself, one thing that comes to me is always I kind of gravitate towards looking at complex challenges and breaking them into bite-sized chunks and solving them by leveraging technology, you know, from a very early days. It's this curiosity that kind of led me to pursue engineering, as you know, as you mentioned. So, and even right after my first master's in mechanical engineering, my first job was with PTC, who you know very well. So I joined their professional services group and I was a road warrior. At that time, we would travel almost 5 days of a week. And that was the time there was an inflection point. Things were moving from 2D world to 3D world. You know, CAD CAM, CAE, and PLM system were, you know, going through a growth spurt. And that's a time that I consulted with so many companies on their both all the way from, you know, the whole product lifecycle, their CAD CAM. That's where I was exposed to many of the shop floor technologies, a lot of optimization, digitization, and automation of information. So I was exposed to CNC, DNC technologies and all. The interesting thing is in one of those difficult assignments, I was in a conference room pilot. The president of the company walks up to me with the CD. At that time, all the software were sold to CD, if you remember, holding a CD. And he tells me, you know, Praveen, he shows me 18-wheeler standing outside. And he says, this CD and your services are costing me more than that 18-wheeler that is standing outside. Are you aware of that? I said, yeah, but you know, those 18-wheeler is not going to optimize and automate your manufacturing and sys operations for you. So, and that's kind of how I ended up my second job at the DTT, right, where I was hired to automate their entire system. And that's the time where design for manufacturing was popular, where the manufacturing information were put in right in the design stage. And then it was lights out manufacturing. It was getting a lot of traction, a lot of robotics over there as well. So I did that. We did some, that's where I was a CIO, CTO for several years. And then after that, I started my company called Lead Strong, along with a couple of others that helped a lot of business transformation. And then that led me to IBM. That's kind of where I was at the forefront of some of these emerging technologies, IoT analytics and blockchain. I was hired into the global business services as well. So I consulted with probably 20 of the Fortune 100 companies. Later on, I joined AWS for the last 2 years, where I'm leading the industrial IoT and analytics.
What a great track record and a really kind of platform of experience that you've developed that time. You know, it's interesting. I got my start actually in CNCs way back when, and it's pretty rare to hear somebody say DNC, so direct numerical control. So you've dated yourself at that. You probably were one of those guys like myself punching paper tape way back in the day. What I enjoyed is you mentioned Lead Strong, a company that you actually co-founded. So in essence, you went from school to large companies to being an entrepreneur relatively early, which is pretty cool. So I'm curious, how did your experience leading your own company help prepare you for your subsequent successes?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Up till that point, till I started the company, I was an engineer, and then I, as a consultant, I was also a technologist, you know, solving problems, optimizing, running a cost center. It was all that I've experienced. I always, at that time, I went back and got my MBA from University of Chicago. Always had this urge to do something more and to be able to solve problems at a larger scale or build something that transcends more than one company that I was working. And that's kind of how I started the company. In fact, the backstory behind that is one of the CIOs that I met wanted to hire me. And then I said, would it be okay if I come in through my own company? And then that's kind of how the company started. But again, the unique thing about being an entrepreneur, as you know, is certainly it has its ups and downs. But I think it really opened up the aperture of thinking. It not only are transforming others and employing people, but also I think it's a tremendous opportunity to really look inside and transform yourself. The key takeaway that I learned from that experience is customer obsession, right? Because a customer is the boss and you don't have that security or anything where anybody, so every day is like a job interview and every day you have to prove yourself. And then it also teaches you an independent thinking, because once you remove that comfort zone of where your paycheck comes from next month, you think differently, right? Because you have to pretty much earn your seat at the table. So you have to prove yourself. It gives you that unique perspective. And also it frees you up to do the right thing and think bigger and also have confidence in your capabilities, right? And the third thing is, again, it challenges you to push your boundaries, because when you're an entrepreneur, you're not always doing the same thing again. You are out there selling and also delivering. It's a lot of different things. You also kind of learn that, you know, many times you do things that may not pan out right at this time. But again, so you start planting the seeds, you start solving, you're meeting people, and ability to really that freedom of to be able to think differently and think, you know, at a different scale. Those are all the things that kind of helped me, because coaching and learning has always stayed, you know, came to me naturally. I was there, but to be able to do that at a different level and with a customer obsession and to do it with an outcome in mind, you know, is something that really helped me all through my career afterwards as well.
They often talk about startup as being the best real world MBA one possibly can take. And I think everything you've talked about here, from the aperture to customer obsession to earning your seat at the table, all certainly affirm this thought of an early formal education via your real world MBA. So certainly advise that.
That's something that I advise everybody to experience, because it really opens up the way a person would think about different things.
Yeah, I certainly agree. In fact, so much so that my son, who is 16, I've been advising him on what his startup needs to be to get prepared for life in the real world versus the academic in there. So now you joined IBM in 2013 with a series of senior roles over 8 years, big data, analytics, predictive asset optimization, and blockchain. Certainly a formative time in manufacturing and asset analytics. If you had to summarize this experience into three key lessons learned, you know, relative to this space, what would they be?
Yeah, that's a great question. IBM was a very unique experience. I still treasure some of the opportunity and some of the things that we'd done while I was at IBM. And just to kind of give you a context, I joined IBM right after, you know, starting this company, running it for about 9 years. IBM asked me to lead their technology service strategy line. And that was a time everything like the cloud was also kind of becoming popular. If you remember, the buzzword CAMS was very popular, cloud, analytics, mobile, and social. IBM has 4 different service lines for that. They needed somebody to come in and really integrate them and consolidated go-to-market strategy for all 4 of them, and then really come up with essentially solution and a methodology that resonated with the customers. And that's what I did. Later on, that role evolved into big data and analytics, and then the Watson analytics came in, and then the blockchain was added. And certainly, we were doing a lot of first of a kind. And even the technology at that time was, you know, a cutting edge, but still, you know, a lot of things needed to be evolved at that time. But if I look back and some of the key lessons that I've learned and, you know, the experiences, especially when you're dealing with these emerging technologies, which haven't been widely adopted, execution is your best salesperson in the field, right? Because there is always this notion of death by POCs, right? Because especially whenever a new shiny object comes in, there will be a lot of demand in the market, a lot of people wanting to know what it is. But not everybody is capable or fully invested to see it through, right? If you think about it, Watson, you know, when the Jeopardy came in, was a huge hit, right? But there was a lot of hard work underneath to make that happen. So it needed to get to a certain level before you can really scale. So that's the risk that a lot of companies make, you know, especially when they're trying out new things. So it also means that you need to work with early adopters and innovators who are willing to forgive you when the technology at its infancy and willing when you're trying to prove something out. What the method that we adopted at IBM that worked best was called garage methodology. So essentially, you don't put all your eggs in one basket and then try to scale. Instead, you try a whole bunch of ideas in a minimalistic settings, and then build consensus around which one is going to scale based, you know, by looking at the potential of the outcomes in the minimalistic setting. So it also means having a strong stakeholder support, both at the customer and internally at your company. So that's very essential, especially when you're trying out some of these newer technologies. And the third thing and most important thing that I learned was ecosystem matters, right? Because you're not only disturbing or disrupting the value chain, you also need to understand how we are disrupting, right? Because it's not always the one that eliminates the waste wins. You also need to think about and keep in mind some of the relationships in the value chain and how everything works together. To give you an example, we did a really interesting track and trace solution using blockchain at a big global ocean carrier. It was revolutionary. Essentially, it kind of eliminated the waste in the middle, because what happens in the ocean freight is sometimes the physical goods travel faster than the paper trail that is associated with them. But what we learned was when we deployed this one, so this was essentially putting out a lot of the middlemen, the freight forwarders, out of business. So certainly they were all up in arms. So we needed to give them a path where they would either still be relevant or they would be part of this. So otherwise what happens is you would end up making a whole bunch of enemies and you would be fighting the battle that you weren't really thinking of fighting, you know. So that's another thing. So understanding the ecosystem and going in with partners, you know, not trying to do it all yourself. Having that support system is also super critical.
All really good learnings to certainly lead you to AWS in 2021 now. I'm curious, what attracted you to the company, and perhaps tell us a little bit about your remit there?
Yeah, as you're aware, you know, AWS has always been a gold standard for logistics supply chain, and it is known as a place where innovations happens and that too happens at scale, right? So when AWS reached out to me to kind of lead their industrial vertical for some of these emerging technologies, IoT and analytics, it was too good to pass up, right? Mainly because of the size and scale that AWS operates and the kind of reach that AWS has globally. And then AWS's ability to attract partners to build that ecosystem that I talked about earlier. Mine is a global role at AWS. My responsibility is to, you know, in a single sentence, is to steer the industrial IoT and analytics offerings, both AWS and our partners, so that we can bring in IoT workloads and then really help, spur the growth for our business, drive revenue and operations, right? As part of this role, I'm responsible for the global go-to-market strategy, the partner ecosystem, the solutions that we roll out in the market, the field readiness, all the things around Industry 4.0 initiatives that we do for both manufacturing and supply chain vertical.
That's quite a remit that you've got. But you mentioned earlier, it would not have been a good thing to pass up such an opportunity. And I must say, as we look across the operating technology areas, you know, the so-called hyperscalers, Amazon, Microsoft Azure, Google Cloud, to name just three, have had a significant impact, I'd say, on the industrial IoT space. You might have just hit on it in terms of IoT workloads a moment ago, but what's AWS's strategy here?
Yeah, I mean, AWS strategy has been consistent, you know, if you think about it from its inception. So AWS Amazon overall is driven by 16 leadership principles. There were 14 and then two got added in 2021. So all these leadership, I think the first and most important thing is customer obsession. Almost 90% of what we do, the services we release, comes directly from the customer demand or request. So AWS is not the company who goes in and then essentially, so we look at it and we are customer obsessed. We don't look at what competitors is doing and try to mimic. Instead, everything we do is working backward from the customer challenges, break those into, you know, actionable use cases, and then align those challenges either with an AWS service or a partner solution, and then go ahead and help them globally, right? As you know, we have presence, you know, more than 240 countries. So I think the general strategy is to advise our customers to start small, but think big and move really fast. And then certainly the industrial manufacturing is a huge growth area for us. If you look at most of the analyst report, they say industrial is by far the largest data producer. I think one of the McKinsey report talked about 1,800 petabytes of data being produced per year, which is, you know, more than this, is double the second closest industry. And then the 90% of the data is locked on-prem. So that's certainly a huge area. So that's why we are rolling out many of the solutions that you see. So we have 14 IoT services and 4 AIML services. And then many of these services are now also part of our partner solutions stack. So a lot of our partners modernize their stack using AWS services so that it's more optimal to bring data to cloud. So that's kind of the general strategy, you know, working backward from the customer use cases and then matching them with the capabilities that we have, either AWS own capabilities or partner capabilities, and then bring those IoT workloads into AWS.
Your thought triggered two things. Number one is a book recommendation, and that is by the same name, Working Backwards by Colin Breyer and Bill Carr. Insights, Stories, and Secrets from Inside Amazon. Well worthwhile read if you want to learn some of the things that Praveen has just mentioned, leadership principles, KPIs, why they don't use PowerPoint, et cetera, et cetera. So the book is quite informative. The other is when you mentioned on-prem data, sadly, the founder of OSIPI, Pat Kennedy, passed as of yesterday, at least at the time we're recording this. And for anybody who knows the extent of data historians in on factory floors everywhere in the world, they are mainly OSIPI systems. So we've lost a true visionary and entrepreneur in the space in that regard. Now, kind of back on topic, we noted recently the downsizing of, I'll call it, the equivalent IIoT or manufacturing teams at your peers at Microsoft and Google Cloud. How should we think about these moves relative to the industrial IoT?
Yeah, I mean, I look at that question in two parts, right? One is, why are there more layoffs in tech than the other industries? And then why are some of the two large hyperscalers are either reducing or have moved away from some of these emerging technologies, right? I think the first one is well evident, right? So certainly some people, they overestimated the growth and the viability of the growth over a sustained period of time. But I think there is no other means or a measure that improves the productivity like tech would do. I expect tech to come back roaring, you know, maybe after Q1, you know, who knows? But certainly the tech is here to stay. The second thing is, you know, why did some of these two hyperscalers are slowing down, right? I think if you look at industrial IoT and analytics, it's not for the weak heart, right? I mean, the sales cycle can be long, sometimes as much as 12 to 14 months, and they need to have a proven solution. You know, I don't think Google really had that much of a play in IoT. They were experimenting with this field, right? If you look at the number of customers moved out and the path they've given, and again, this is an outsider view, you got to have a lot of patience to win this and have credibility, and you got to have a build several years of sustained success, right? Microsoft, I think they still have a play, but I think it's just organized differently. You know, certainly they probably overestimated some of the demand as well. But in general, you know, industrial area is complex and hard. And if you have been traditionally used to the IT way of working, and if you have built through the IT mindset, bridging this gap with OT and IT takes a different mindset. Certainly, that's something that we take pride in Amazon, because many of the things that we roll out, we also have Amazon, who is also one of our biggest consumer, because as you know, Amazon also operate some of the largest warehouses and factories. And, you know, we see the value and we prove it out. You know, certainly, as I mentioned, customer obsession is number one. We make sure that things that we roll out are in the best interest of the customer and they work, right? So I think that's the difference.
Maybe I had to put a point on that. I was impressed that AWS rolled out something called Monitron a few years ago. It's a full stack AWS or Amazon branded, if you will, predictive maintenance solution. And I kind of saw it as an interesting possible shot across the bow of operating technology companies, because it was a full stack, or it is a full stack offering from sensor to gateway to cloud connectivity, and done effectively on an as a service basis. I have to ask, what's the story behind Monitron and what lessons do you think it's taught AWS?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, you said it earlier. So the idea here is, if you take a nascent field like industrial, which has a lot of potential and also complex, which involves many people, how do you grow in this market? So you got to, you know, the greatest simple solutions are always the simple solutions in my mind. I think the world has proved this again and again, right? And that's kind of what Monitron is trying to prove out in the industry. The backstory is Monitron was born out of our own struggles in Amazon warehouses. I think it's in the distribution center in Germany, it had, I think, 26 kilometers of conveyor belt that was moving the material across. What would happen that time was if one of those conveyor belts break down, it would be a huge problem for us in terms of meeting the time to order or delivery commitments that warehouse had. So this came out of that pain. So Monitron, you know, for those of you who don't know, it's a simple device and a connectivity. It's a full stack solution. It doesn't require, you know, a large number of systems integrators or professional services or OTSI. It's a 2-inch device. You can purchase them, I think, the whole stack with 5 sensors for $725, right off Amazon. It is even magnetic too. You can essentially take that and stick it to anything that has a rotary component in it, rotating equipment, pumps, motor. It analyzes vibrations, temperature, and then the data connects. It comes with a gateway as well, so you don't even need to purchase another gateway. The data from the sensors going to the gateway via Bluetooth connectivity, and then that data gets analyzed using some of the machine learning analytics capabilities that we have. You can also combine that with more advanced capabilities like lookout for equipment to detect the anomalies in your operations, and also to have some kind of a clustering to figure out which one needs attention. So essentially, it's a simple to use solution, much needed in the industrial space, that can do a number of things and then give you early warnings in terms of any impending disruptions that could happen in your operations. So I think the lessons is, you know, when you come up with a simple solution and market it in a way that is attractive, things tend to grow, right? And we've seen tremendous growth for Monitron, you know, in the industry in general. And I think, you know, we've gotten demand from many OEMs trying to white label Monitron and then roll it out as part of their complex stack. So this is a unique case where the sensors and gateways and the insights are all part of the same solution stack, and they seamlessly work with each other. I think Monitron has been a phenomenal story for AWS and Amazon.
I would agree, although I don't know all of the performance measures behind it. But what I was interested in, having certainly, you know, experienced the space and now, you know, having read the book, is it explains a lot about how Amazon tries things and continues to grow them. So you're going back to your point about OT as a long-term commitment and a long-term play, not similar to enterprise IT in some senses. And so doing these full stack solutions in many ways is, I think, almost emblematic of that long-term focus that Amazon has. And thus, it's not surprised to see that you guys haven't slowed down, even though your competitors have. So I have to ask, I saw that AWS rolled out several new industrial and manufacturing-oriented offerings here recently. What are some of the more notable in your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, there's always things happening in AWS and Amazon, right? I think in general, some of the new offerings, I can bucket them in two broad categories. One is the AWS services that we roll out. So that could be either used by builders as Lego blocks so that they can put together a solution aligned to a use case, or essentially a solution that we put together by leveraging some of these services that aligns with the use case, either working with a partner or as a guidance that we provide to our customers. Some of the notable ones that I could think of top of my head is, you know, we, as you know, April of 2022, we GA'd AWS TwinMaker, which is really a digital twin solution for the industrial market. There have been several use cases that we recommend, and people are also using this in many different ways that we haven't quite thought about as well, especially when you combine this capability with our partner solutions like Matterport, have the 3D visualizations even within buildings or in the industrial space, you know, has been an amazing journey. And then we also have, as you know, we recently announced Bedrock, which is a generative AI, which we expect is going to be interesting to see how many use cases and how all our customers would use. Certainly has the capabilities. And then we also released RoboRunner, is another industrial service to help orchestrate the robots within the warehouse or four walls, for that matter, factories or other things. And last reInvent, we also released a new supply chain solution called Galaxy, which is also, you know, expected to grow and has gotten tremendous interest from the field.
Excellent. Well, lots of great offerings. And as you said, it's always a constant stream of new value-added offerings that are coming. So we will look forward to those next ones as well. Finally, in closing, I always like to ask, where do you find your personal inspiration?
That's a great question. So the inspirations come from many different places, right? So the three places that I can think of is from my travel and just meeting with customers, partners, and even the colleagues. There is a lot of wonderful stories and wonderful people, very talented people that I meet. Just listening to them and hearing their stories and their journey, I take a lot of inspiration. And then the second area is my own families. As you know, I have two little girls. One is going 15, another is 12. So they inspire me to be a best version of myself, you know, when I look at myself in their eyes and on their shoes. And then third thing is, as I mentioned, curiosity has always been kind of the driver for me, always listening to something or reading something, both professionally and other thing to help me ground it. Also, I'm a long-time meditator. So this is my kind of advertisement for people to meditate. But I think the world would be a better place if everybody in the world meditates, right? So if you're looking for certain books, I would highly recommend on the professional side. I don't recommend reading large number of books. Instead, I suggest read a fewer books, read them multiple times so that you really kind of ingrain the learnings from that book and you can essentially absorb those things. That's been my approach. So I select certain books and many times I read them over and over again so that I really absorb them. One such book is Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. It's a wonderful book if you haven't read it. And it really kind of teaches you that, you know, some of the faculties that we have in our mind, which are our biggest assets, can also be detriments if we don't use them right and could be a source of a lot of negativity, anxiety, and stuff like that, right? So I think, you know, just realizing all we have is now is a wonderful thing to help us ground it and to do more as well. Other thing is the Thank You for Being Late by Thomas Friedman. It's a wonderful book on how Mother Nature is resilient and how things operate and how Mother Nature has really guarded the innovations, you know, all the way through. So if only we learn from that and then operate, our approach would be very different. So that's kind of what I do when I have free time, you know, certainly just people, you know, people are the biggest source of inspiration.
Two great book recommendations. And it's interesting. I'm not a big fan of rereading what I've read before, but I certainly have done The Power of Now at least three times. and anything Thomas Friedman writes is always a worthwhile read and probably reread, to your point in that regard. So appreciate that. So Praveen, thank you for sharing this time and these insights with us today.
Thank you, Ken, for having me on your show. It's definitely a pleasure speaking with you. I look forward to our future interactions.
As well, and it's been a pleasure speaking with you as well. So this has been Praveen Rao, Global Head for Industrial IoT and Analytics at AWS. Thank you for listening, and please join us for the next episode of our Digital Thread podcast series. Thank you, and have a great day. You've been listening to the Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed the discussion, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Please check our website at momenta.one for archived versions of podcasts, as well as resources to help with your digital industry journey. Thank you for listening.